In this episode of Movie Wallahs, we talk about Gail Daughtry and the Celebrity Sex Pass and Tony. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And ESD as well.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. And a happy Friday indeed.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Happy Friday. Sorry.
Yeah. One too many, yes.
Yes. Sorry.
Well, welcome back to the podcast. We have been busy today recording, so
yes.
This is a little anachronistic. Is that the right word? It's 3 weeks ago, probably at least, since you're hearing this from when we recorded. But part of it was we got a great opportunity to see Tony, a very early screening under quite a serious embargo.
Yes.
We don't normally get them that long, so we weren't able to bring this to you sooner. Also, Rashmi, we're going to revisit one of your favourite movies from Tribeca.
Yes.
Film festival of this
yes.
year.
Yes.
So,
saw it at Tribeca. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay.
So let's talk about that. We do have just a moment to do a streaming pick, so let's go straight into our segment of I Can't Find Anything to Watch on Video On Demand. We are going to bring you a couple of streaming picks. Rashmi or Yasti, why don't you start?
Okay, go ahead.
So I'm going to recommend, this came out a long while ago. It is the movie The Adam Project. And it's a really cute movie.
With Ryan Reynolds.
Yes. Mm. It's just a really cute, sweet movie that has a lot of heart I think is worth watching if you have a few minutes. Yeah. Unexpected, cute, it's a good story, it's sweet, it's really heartfelt.
Yeah.
I loved it. The Adam Project.
Where is it on?
Netflix.
Okay. And I'm going to recommend a movie that I saw, a long time ago at Tribeca, and I haven't been able to forget it, and that says something. It's one of the best action period piece that I've seen in a long time, and it's very relevant to The Odyssey, which has come out, and I believe Tom Holland and John Bernthal used to be roommates, but this is the first movie they were together, and it's the movie called Pilgrimage. And if you haven't seen it, it's just amazing. A very young Tom Holland, a very young John Bernthal, and it's about a novice monk and a mysterious former crusader who embark on a dangerous mission through a hostile land to transport a holy relic to Rome. So they have found a crucifix
which needs to be brought back
to Rome, and it's raw and it's full of action and it's beautifully shot and it's just splendid. So it's streaming on Hulu. Pilgrimage. Please watch it. You will really like it.
Okay.
My pick, Yasti did my homework for me. So thank you, Yasti. but it would have been one had I come across it in my search for streaming pick, I would have definitely chosen. And that is the movie The Last Duel. It was a 2021
movie
directed by Ridley Scott, starring Matt Damon, Adam Driver, Jodie Comer. Ben Affleck makes an appearance in this. I don't remember him that well, but this is one of those movies that reminds you why Ridley Scott does what he does so well. I think it kind of got overlooked in the award season. I don't know whether it was a timing or a marketing thing. But it was one of my favorite movies of that year, and it does some very clever perspective shifts, which I think, you just forget I even said that, because, when you watch this movie, you kind of understand things from different characters' perspectives in
the
a way that...
The structure is very ingenious.
Really yes. good.
14th century France.
Yeah.
Who would think that a movie set in 14th century France would be... That's
so
compelling,
good.
But it's
absolutely.
Exceptionally compelling.
Yeah, and I think if I recall correctly, it starts off kind of slowly and conventionally, and then it opens up into Something very, very special. So again, this is one that we had the joy of watching on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would work very well on the small screen as well. So if you have not seen The Last Duel by Ridley Scott, then you can see it now on Hulu. Yazdi, your pick was?
Pilgrimage, also set during the Crusades way back when, and it's also on Hulu.
And Rashmi?
The Adam Project.
Okay, it's review time, so let's talk about our two movies, Gail Daughtry and the Celebrity Sex Pass, and we also will bring you our review of Tony.
Okay, so I have the intro to Gail Daughtry, and this is when her fiancé uses a celebrity pass agreement, Midwest bride Gail Daughtry travels to Hollywood seeking revenge by pursuing her own celebrity encounter. So this is directed by David Wayne, and David Wayne's done mostly TV. I believe this is his maybe cinema debut?
No. He made a great movie called The Wet Hot American Summer.
Ah, okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure if that was a TV or a...
It was a movie, yeah.
Okay,
yeah, yeah.
And it's written by Ken Marino and David Wayne, and it has a whole host of people, including John Hamm, Zoe Deutsch, John Slattery's John here, Slattery. Ken Marino, Miles Gutierrez-Reilly, Ben Wang, Sabrina Impacciatore, Joe Latruglia, a whole host of others. So as Joe said, I watched this at... Tribeca Film Festival earlier this year. And if the episode is out, you will hear my original instant feedback that I had. But Joe, what did you think of this? I was like, you have to watch this.
Yeah, I'm kind of annoyed. Because normally this type of stuff doesn't work for me. And here I don't understand why. I think I do understand why. This is one of those movies that has such sweet heart to it. It has, and I say I'm normally annoyed by, I get worried when a movie feels like it has to deliver a punchline with every line of dialogue. I think there's an insecurity about that in terms of the writing that normally comes through. But what I'll say here is, to hell with that rule, because when they're genuinely funny, and every gag in this movie landed for me, every gag, as silly as they were, it was as punny as they were. It did the thing that a comedy should do, and it made me genuinely laugh, despite the absurdity of the whole thing from start to finish.
Yes, D.
So I've been a big fan of David Wayne ever since I saw Wet Hot American Summer, which if you haven't seen, it's almost 20 years since it came out, I think. But a very young Paul Rudd is in that movie. Christopher Maloney is in it. Molly Shannon is in it. Ken Marino, who is in this movie, is also in this. Amy Poehler, a very young Bradley Cooper, is in that movie.
Wow.
You have to watch that movie. It's a classic, I think. It's just so funny. And I'm glad that, you know, he's got the money and the funding to make this movie, which is Gail Daughtry and the Celebrity Sex Pass. It kind of almost reminds me of the Naked Gun reboot. Because this kind of movie is just throwing jokes at you, like mile a minute. Like, it's just throwing jokes at you. Do all of them work? No. Are some of them completely absurd? Yes. Are they breaking the fourth wall and winking at you? All the time. But there is a time to watch a movie like that. You want, with the way the world is, you want to be in a goofy, silly, stupid movie who is begging to make you laugh. And I think you need to give credit to a movie like this. Is this a 9 out of 10? No. But am I going to recommend this to other people? Sure. I'll probably forget about it in a month as well. But you did not. But it's so endearing in its absurd commitment to make you laugh at any cost I liked it. It's not a great film, but I have great affection for it.
So, like I said, I watched this at Tribeca Film Festival and I absolutely fell in love with it, so much so that I insisted that I come to the formal screening, and I'm so glad I did, because I picked up a few more things and it certainly held on second viewing. And I was worried, Joe, for the thing that you said, because it just throws stuff at you. But once you have the time to, like, because you know what's coming, it has time to breathe a little bit. It's even funnier on second viewing, I think. Which is, that's tough for a movie to do. This is a reimagining in some ways of The Wizard of Oz. It's so cute. It has so many references to The Wizard of Oz. I just love, it's so full of heart. It's so absurd. It's so funny. It's got so many cameos of people. I was trying to write them all down. I love this movie. I just love this movie. And I love Zoe Deutsch. And I was trying to remember where I'd seen her before because she's got such a familiar face. And she was in an incredible movie called Nouvelle Vague, which was out last year or the year before, I think.
It's a black and white movie.
It was a Richard Linklater movie. And this just shows you the talent of, she's a chameleon.
Oh, she's been in so many good films on Netflix.
Yeah, she's amazing. And I think the movie lives and dies by her performance, right? The believability of her character. And she does it so well. So I absolutely love this movie. I would recommend this to everyone. It's so funny.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I think, and the important thing is how she plays this, because she holds this together.
Yeah.
Right? And her, she knows she's in a comedy, right? This character knows that she's in Crazy Town.
Yeah.
And Crazy,
they all do.
Yeah, and Crazy Town, like, you know, I always think about Crazy Town things where we, well, you know, we did improv for a few years ago, and you know, one of the things that breaks improv very quickly is when people go straight for the absurd.
Yeah.
Because the absurd doesn't always land, but here the jokes are so finely tuned.
Yeah.
That I think there's like 101 rewrites of every single line on the script, because each one I think is finely tuned. And yes, you said, you know, the gags didn't always land for you. They did for me, and that's what I found the movie kind of exhausting to keep up with. And I guarantee I'll have the same experience when I rewatch it, Rashmi, because I know that like 30-50% of the gags were lost on me. I was thinking about the last one before,
right?
And I had like a few delayed laughs because something would play out, and then I'd be like, oh. Then the callbacks, the cameos, the game that they have here, the break in is just, you know, that whole scene when they're like just
all of it, yeah.
It's all complete nonsense, but it's done
like with, the villainous woman. She's brilliant.
Was she from the White Lotus? From
I
the
think
second
so.
Season? Is
I
it
think
the same
so.
Woman who was the clerk at the second season. Anyway, yeah,
but,
she
but
was.
It's all
she was just hilarious.
Great,
she was hilarious. Let's find her. Impacciatore.
Yeah, I think she was in the second season of the one set in
Sabrina Impacciatore.
Yeah. But anyway, what I also like is, like, there are parts of, sorry, I keep going back to Wet Hot American Summer, but there are parts of that with Bradley Cooper right now completely regrets. He's like, oh my God, right now he's thinking, did I do that in this movie? But that's the kind of stuff, right? If you are in a movie like this, you have to do absurd, stupid, ridiculous thing, which you can't have any shame. And I commend people like John Slattery, and I commend people like John Hamm, just to give an example of two people who take their own image in the movie universe and literally poop on them, right? So John Slattery is making fun of himself.
Yes.
John Hamm is making a huge ass of himself, but he's in on the joke, right? Yeah. As is John Slattery. So I commend these people for just saying, the hell with it. If I can't laugh at myself, then, you know, why am I in movies? And that's really, there's something to be said for your ability to laugh at yourself like that.
100%.
And be able to make a complete mockery of your image in Hollywood.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
No, yes, the movie,
it's
she's
different.
She's been in The Hand of Dante, G20, Across the River.
Okay.
I think she's very, very big in Italian movies.
She's hilarious.
Dog Years. She was brilliant. She's absolutely brilliant.
It's a good thing she's Italian, because she's making such a bad, like, caricature of Italians.
Yeah,
somebody else did it.
I think that's the key to this movie, is everyone is a caricature, right? Yeah. The gay best friend is the gay best friend. The young guy they pick up along the way.
Oh yeah, it's the Asian.
He's like, the caricature is so funny.
And this again, this type of screenplay, if I picked it up, would have smacked of insecurity.
Right.
The fact that everyone who was in this agreed to be in it, I think speaks to something that, you know, I would have not picked up on. That there's a sharpness here.
Yeah.
to the gags. And there's also a huge, this movie is so sweet, despite...
So sweet.
I mean, I couldn't even be angry with her partner at the beginning of the movie for like, you know, his foible. Like, the whole thing is just, you know, very, very enjoyable, very funny. So
don't let the title Celebrity Sex Pass throw you off. The title is horrible.
The title is not good. Memorable.
The title will be the reason that this movie doesn't do well.
But don't let that put you off. I think, yes, you're right.
Yeah, it needs something punchy like The Hangover, you know.
Exactly.
We don't need to hear the whole, like, you know,
It needs shortening.
Yeah, even if it was called Celebrity Sex Pass, that would work better. But
Okay, scores, Yazdi.
A 7.5 out of 10. It's perfect for if you want just a good laugh and forget all that's wrong with the world.
So, which you will back up of?
I'll punch it up to 8.
You're very generous today.
Maybe I'll... 7. Sorry, 7. It's not a 7.5. But I'm backing it down to 7. Sorry, I don't want to be over...
Yeah. Mine's a 7 rounded up to an 8.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not... I say it's not
great cinema.
No, but it is. That's the thing. It's
a great time at the movies.
It's a good time at the movies. Yeah. And it does exactly what it's supposed to do as a comedy, which is it makes me laugh. You know, is it nonsense? Yes, it is. But it's funny. And that your Naked Gun reference yesterday is exactly on point. It's not as plainly visual gags as Naked Gun, but the dialogue hits you line after line after line, and they make me giggle.
There's a person drowning in their soup.
It's exactly
that. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah.
See, it's making you laugh just thinking about it.
Yeah,
so you're 8.
I'm going to go with 8, yep.
Okay, and for me, it's an 8 as well. I've watched this twice now, and it stood up both times. So 8 out of 10.
All right.
Very good.
Final movie.
Movie number 2 is Tony.
So there's this Canadian director called Matt Johnson, who I wasn't familiar with, but he made a movie in 2023, which was very highly regarded. I never got around to seeing it, but it was a movie called Blackberry, which is about the people who were involved with
it. Excellent.
Yeah, I missed out on seeing it.
It was an excellent movie. We just watched it recently.
And it will be a future streaming pick.
Yes.
For me.
It's great.
So the director of Blackberry takes on no less than the early life of Anthony Bourdain as the basis of this movie. I think for me personally, and I know it's the same for you, Rashmi, Anthony Bourdain is pretty hallowed in terms of his persona and what he went through and, you know, how open and naked he was to the world, you know, warts and all. And I think it's very difficult to bring somebody like that, you know, to the screen with honor and not have it be like a traditional, you know, stupid biopic, either too reverential or too interested in the dark parts. So I think that's a very hard assignment, but be that as it may, we have this biopic of the early life of Tony, Anthony Bourdain, and how he came to be. And the one-liner is, a 19-year-old Anthony Bourdain travels to Provincetown and stumbles into the chaotic world of a restaurant kitchen, setting off a summer that'll shape the course of his life. The cast is Dominic Sessa, and if this name sounds unfamiliar to you, Dominic Sessa was the person who played the kid in The Holdovers. He's the guy who gets stuck during the holidays, you know, with Paul Giamatti's character in The Holdovers. Other well-known actors are Antonio Banderas, Emilia Jones, and Leo Woodall. So we just saw this just a few days ago. What did you guys think of Tony?
I love this movie. I absolutely love this movie. If I didn't know this was true, I would be like, this is ridiculous. It's such a ridiculous story and unbelievable, but it was so good. I mean, I was blown away by the acting, the production. And Antonio Banderas is fantastic. I mean, right, that Oscar nomination already, I think. I love this movie.
Joe?
I liked it too. I think, you know, even though our hero here in the movie is not completely likable, it's done with much love for Anthony Bourdain. It's an interesting choice to focus on only this part of his life, because what he went on to do and become remains very interesting to me. And I was expecting, in some ways, for us to accelerate at some point. At some point, I realized, oh, we're here. We're here in this like one summer of his life, which were clearly a very formative experience. But I was hoping the movie would have expanded into more about Anthony Bourdain. But then we have the documentary for that, and we have endless footage on CNN. We know who he is, and you know, I'm still very sad about how we lost Anthony Bourdain. And I was hoping the movie might introduce some parts of that. But no, it's made with much love. And it's really well made. And performances of Banderas, Leo Woodall, as well as Dominic Sessa, you know, this is really well crafted, but it feels, it's like how the family remembered him, right? He was cheeky, flawed, but real, authentic. And the authenticity of Anthony Bourdain, the person we got to know, definitely was captured here, right? So I really enjoyed it.
That it's not like the Michael Jackson version of the movie, right? He's quite actually not very likable at all, but we can talk about that.
So you guys know that my next door neighbor is making a little 10-minute short. You know, she's written a little 10-minute short, and she's in the process of working it, and
you're working on it as well.
It's kind of fun. But what I wanted to say is that you realize when you start making a movie, even if it's short, that you need to build the reality of it piece by piece by piece, right? You have to build it by the actors, how they look, what they're wearing, what are the props, what is the location. It's all fake, right? It's all fake. You're asking people to believe this is the truth. This is the verisimilitude. We keep on talking about it. And many a film with good intentions fails because it cannot recreate a belief that what you're seeing on screen is actually happening.
Right.
And I think the great strength of this film is I never doubted that any of this was happening. A lot of this is shot in the supposedly the 70s in, you know,
Providence.
Northeast coast of the. And when I first started watching the movie, it was nice enough. And I was like, oh, this is kind of cute. And this story is going along. And then at the halfway point, where most movies start to kind of slacken and start to kind of like, oh, how am I going to get to the finish line? I think this movie really took off, and it became so much deeper, and it became so much more thoughtful, and it became so much more realistic. I was in tears. I was laughing.
Yeah.
I kind of believed these people. I believed this environment, which when you think about it is magic. It's how do you make people believe that what you're filming is real? And this movie somehow gets that done. So I really, really appreciated this movie. I love movies which have a good opening credit, and the movie goes 10 minutes into it before you have the opening credits. And I really like all the touches in the movie. I like the use of period music. There is no contemporary music. All the music is from the 70s, which is from that time. It's a very difficult task to take somebody as complicated and complex as Anthony Bourdain and kind of show him on screen with all those complexities intact. So I know you want, I didn't know anything about the movie either. And I know you wanted to see his latter years. But I think this movie is perfect because it brings you to the doorstep of what led him to pursue cooking at all as a career. And it kind of ends perfectly, I think. But I would love to see a part two and a part three. One other thing I would say before I shut up is that when I came out of the movie, you know, our press agent, Kathy, asked me, what did you think about the movie? And I told her that I cannot think of a greater compliment than to say that I did not want this movie to end.
Yeah.
I just did not. I could have stayed for another hour and a half finding out what happened next in his life. Great. I give great credit to whoever has put this thing together. It's a lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, it really is. And I'm, you know, I it was interesting to concentrate on the fact that him and the woman that he pursues, they married, you know, they married, and they were married for 20 years.
Oh, I didn't know this.
Yeah, so they were actually together, so and they married. That was his first wife. And I think portraying him as an asshole,
because
he was quite hateable.
Extremely hateable. Like, I was like, why is anybody giving this man any consideration?
Yeah.
I would kick him out.
Yeah.
I'd be like, go get your act together.
Yeah. So I really like that it's the thing that led to the thing that made him famous. It's not the thing that made him famous. It's the thing that led to the thing. And again, I love that part of it. Like, it's, I was just mesmerized the entire way through.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's incredibly well crafted.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, one of the things that, and I've not read Kitchen Confidential, but I know.
I started to, yeah.
But I know what Kitchen Confidential is, and I've read excerpts of it, and I've discussed it with people. So, you know, I feel like I'm familiar with the book and the world, and the voice of Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah.
To kind of say, it captured that Kitchen Confidentialness of the chaos of a real working kitchen. You know, that it lacked the romanticism that we have with things like, you know, chef and, you know, the bear. Thank
yeah.
you. Because oftentimes it's grueling, brutal, grinding work. I love the Antonio Banderas character. I hope that's based on somebody real.
It is, yeah.
Because he felt so authentic, and that's one of my favorite performances in of his
really
period.
Good.
Like you say, Rashmi, you know, write up that award speech, because he's going to. I hope it isn't lost in the wash by the time that we get you know, to the December season, because this is a very, very well acted movie. Leo Woodall. We just saw him in Tuna.
Yeah.
Have you seen Tuna yet?
I have not.
It's
I'm
good.
You
easy.
Must.
Yeah,
I really want to see.
Yeah, you must.
But I've seen him in so many other things. He could just be this, you know, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, cutesy, leading hero stuff. But he's doing really. This is a very difficult role.
This is a very difficult role.
I wouldn't even think that he would be able to nail the accent or be believable in the words that are coming out of it. But I forgot it was Leo Woodall. I was with him. I believed him, his stringy hair and his clothes and his accent. Sorry, go on.
No.
Yeah, it was quite remarkable.
Yeah.
And just going back to the Antonio Banderas character, I think in any lesser hands, either with the script or the acting or the direction, it could have just become this savior character who comes and leads this wayward child to the light. But it's not, of course he does that, but it's more complicated than that. It's more nuanced than that. And the way things play out, it's not exactly that he held his hand.
Right.
He just kind of showed him the light a little bit. And I don't want to give too much away, but I think how that character is judged by the movie, you know, it's not Dead Poets Society, although I have nothing against Dead Poets Society. It's not that literal in terms of, you know, what that character does to the Anthony Bourdain character, but it's the complexity of that character which is also brought forth.
Oh, it's incredibly deep. And there's even, I won't go there because I think it reveals a little more than I wanted to about the movie, but I mean, It's very well-rounded who he is, and it's very believable in terms of his responses. That's why I feel like it has to be someone real, and I hope in some ways this is somebody who became more than
a
chef in a small little seafood
joint. Well, I think the story is that he was someone who had had a career and then retired in Massachusetts, in Provincetown.
Okay.
And there is a great photograph I found of Anthony Bourdain, the Leo Woodall character, and the chef standing against the wall.
They showed it
at the end. That's right. Yeah, sorry, I thought I'd found it afterwards. But yeah, I believe it was someone.
Yeah, no, it's terrific stuff. All right, are we done? Let's go
scores.
Rating.
8.5 out of 10.
Which
I will back down to an 8. But this movie, even while I was watching it, I didn't realize that it was slowly burrowing itself into my heart. And by the time it ended, my heart was full with this story, and I don't say this lightly. Everything about this movie is done so right. It's deceivingly simple, but it's not. This is how you should do a biopic. Well done. 8.5 out of 10.
Yeah.
At which you are what?
Backing down to 8.
Backing down to 8.
Yeah.
I feel like an 8 is too stingy. And, you know, I kind of felt critical of the movie because it wasn't what I wanted, right? Like, that's, you know, but, you know, having discussed it with you guys, I remember my kind of reverence for it. And it has only been a couple of days, so we'll see how that coalesces over time. But, yeah, right now it's showing me that 2026 is, once again, a very good year for movies. And I'm surprised at the timing of its release, because if it was released towards the end of the year, I think this would be a contender for many things. So, yeah, I'll go with a 9. I mean, again, my personal disappointment is that it, like you said, yes, it's not the ended.
Fault, yeah.
I want to
this
see.
This could have been a 3-hour movie, right? This could have been a 3-hour movie.
I want to see Act 2 of Anthony Bourdain, I want to see Act 3 of Anthony Bourdain. Yeah. So.
I'm hoping that this movie catches on and they are commissioned to do chapter 2 in his life and chapter 3. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. What's your score?
8. Solid.
Yeah.
Tasty 8.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's a movie about food.
Exactly.
So much food.
Exactly.
There's so much food.
Exactly.
In this
there
movie.
Was technique. I was like admiring the technique and so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was so well paced.
We missed
as
Anthony
well.
Bourdain. Made me miss him all over again.
I haven't seen Emilia Clarke a lot, but she looked familiar, but she was perfect in the role.
So good. Yeah. Everyone was so good.
Yeah. Lew Woodall.
So
my
good.
God.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's he's
his day is yet to come, but he's building.
He is quite something. Yeah. You're right. There's a trajectory that he's on and we can all see it. And, you know, I hope that he gets his chance to shine in a lead role. Tuna is excellent.
Yeah, Tuna is excellent. Yeah.
T-U-N-E-R, please.
Tuna. Not the fish.
Seek it out.
Yeah, not Tuna.
Tuna
the fish.
is it's a very special movie as well. All right. Thank you again for listening. We will be back soon enough with more Movie Wallers. So, again, appreciate you taking the time to check us out, to download us, to consume us on YouTube. Until our next episode. Too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.
Movie Wallace is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter.